the Witty Committee. I'm Claire.
And I'm Courtney. And this week, we are reading the second book in Meg Cabot's The Princess Diaries series, Princess in the Spotlight. But before we get started, Claire, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you've been reading outside the podcast this week?
So outside the podcast this week, I have been, I started rereading Jenny Han's The Summer I Turned Pretty in anticipation of the Prime Video series coming out soon. It's this whole series. That's Eddie. But it's very much like summer drama, teen. Honestly, we might want to cover them on a later season. They're really good, but there's no mean girl, so maybe not.
We'll see. That's kind of the whole point.
I know. But they're good. I feel like I remember there being like a teen marriage situation in the books that I can no longer remember whether or not that actually happened. So I will update on child bride situation. What about you, Courtney? What have you been reading, watching, doing outside the pod?
So last year in the summer, I went to a literary festival street fair in my neighborhood. And when I was there, I picked up some vintage Nancy Drew books. And they were ones that had like two books per book. And so I've been reading some of those because I've been like, it's been raining outside. Like I'll read this book that I have and have had in my like little personal library before I go to the library. Cause who wants to trek out in the rain and go to the library? And then the weather was beautiful. So then I went to the library anyway. And so now I have like four books to read, but presently, I'm finishing Message in the Hollow Oak, the Nancy Drew book.
I loved Nancy Drew books growing up, and I also loved the Nancy Drew computer game. I don't know if you had that, but it was very much like back in the... We had two computer games, I think. One was a Nancy Drew, like, hide-and-seek, find, like, hidden clue one, and then the other one was the, like, Jimmy Neutron end of the world. Computer game where like that weird Jimmy Neutron aliens attack. I don't know. So
yeah, I did not play that game, but I did write my senior thesis in college about Nancy Drew. So
just a fun little TBT for you there. I would have to say this book was also a fun little TBT because I remember reading it, but I hadn't remembered like that much of the plot. But it has a very kind of pivotal moment or pivotal plot line, I would say, that like is kind of hinted at in the second Princess Diaries movie, but it's definitely not focused on. And in this book, it is heavily focused on. And I think that like it's just another example of Meg Cabot's writing really capturing what a like pubescent teenager's thoughts are.
Do you want me to talk while Eddie goes on his tirade?
Yes, please.
Claire and I texted each other a lot in the process of reading this book, being like, have you gotten to this part? And I highlighted so many passages that I thought were absolutely hilarious. But so to Claire's point, there are three big revelations that happen in this book. And two of them are tied together. The first one is very opening of the book. Mia finds out that her mother is pregnant with Mr. Giannini's baby. And Mia freaks out.
Well, I mean, I would too if I was 14 and I was fine and I found out that I was going to have a younger sibling. That being said, like, Helen Thermopolis is like a hottie. She's 36, which like makes sense. That tracks.
She's primo also, baby like, time.
That's like still like, I don't know what Mia's talking about. It's definitely not like, how old was my mom when I was 14? Jesus. This is what being home alone with the dog is like. He's fine. Anyway, when I was 14, my mom is 31 years older than me. So my mom was already 45-ish. Yeah, 45. So still hot. Not going to say my mom wasn't hot, but I wouldn't say she was in primo baby mode.
No, but it's certainly also like Mia's relationship to her mother, as was established in the first book, is very much like Mia's mother, Helen, loves her very much and does care for her and does things to like parent her. But in terms of certain aspects of responsibility, Mia sort of takes the helm, like paying bills and getting the groceries and things like, and like going and picking up the takeout. Like those are things that Mia takes on as her responsibility. Yes. And so she's worried that Helen is not responsible enough for a baby.
Yes. I think that that's kind of supposed to be less about like motherhood and more about her like flighty artistness, like
totally
artisticness. But Mia is nervous for a couple of reasons. One, she thinks her mother isn't prepared to like care for a child by like nourishing her body, because Mia's like this militant vegetarian, and obviously pregnant women, morning sickness is a thing, cravings are a thing, you just deal with it.
It's very like early 2000s mom shamey. Yes. Though, where she's like, oh, you can't eat like all this garbage that you've been eating before, you need to eat like watercress and all this and stuff alfalfa. And Mia's mom, and Mia's mom is like, no, in the order that we're gonna place with the bodega, I'm gonna get Diet Coke and Cheetos because I'm gonna do what I want. I've already done this before, Mia.
Exactly. And like, you turned out fine. One thing that kind of puts a kink in that situation for Mia, well, there's two things that kind of come after that. So the first is that Mia finds out she's going to have a younger sibling. And shockingly enough, Helen, who has professed to be against like organized relationships and organized marriage for the entirety of Mia's life, decides that she and Mr. Giannini are going to get married. So this is all stuff that like the only other person at this time who knows about this is Mia, the 14-year-old, which great choice there. What happens that makes that a little bit more of a tenuous situation than it already would be, having her be the only person keeping your secret as a 14-year-old, which again, don't ever trust a 14-year-old with a secret. Mia is surprised by Grandmère. Grandmère was not able to go on vacation to Baden-Baden in Switzerland and recuperate. Grandmère has instead decided that it is time for Mia to make a press appearance with what to me sounded like a Katie Couric kind of situation. Like a young, beautiful version of a Barbara Walters. So Mia's going to do her first public interview. And so that is what Mia is preparing all week for. She's terrified. Terrified to the point where she makes herself sick.
Yeah, and I think that the amount of preparation that Grandmère gives her is not really like the media training. Like, we do media training at my firm in PR, and I don't think that the amount of media training that they... I don't do it. Like, it's more for the PR side, but like, I don't think that the media training that they give to her as like a first interview as the future head of state for a principality, they like really don't... They prepare her about like how to sit and which spoon to use, which are all important things. But they don't, ask for the interview question. Well, I mean, in terms of heads of state dinners, I guess.
Of princesses.
But they don't, they don't ask her, like, hey, could we get the interview questions beforehand so that Mia could prepare her responses? And the first thing that comes out of Mia's mouth is, oh, yeah, I'm excited for my future little brother or sister. And at this point, Helen has not told Philippe that she's pregnant. And so Grandmère and Philippe are just standing in the background listening to this interview, and they both flip out because they didn't know she was pregnant.
And Philippe like almost passes out. Like he like, and so just refresher, because in the movies, a lot of these people don't have names. So Philippe is Mia's dad. So Philippe, he like almost passes out and like needs a moment. And it's so funny because Beverly, who's the interviewer, who's the, you know, Katie Couric-esque character, is the one who kind of saves the day for the interview there. And it's kind of a back-to-back interview situation. Much in, like, I don't know if you've ever seen clips of, like, royal interviews or anything. But do you know, the only one I can remember, really, is the one they did for Prince Harry, where, like, in the middle of it, he had to get up and run and, like, fly a helicopter. So I don't really have a lot of frame of reference for like royal. And then, you know, I've seen like the fake ones on The Crown. But what I'm imagining is that like Mia is like the soft serve and then he's the heavy hitter. So there's like an interim period in between. So they have to make sure he's like able to come on an interview with this hotshot interviewer, Beverly. So Mia ends up like finishing the interview. She doesn't remember anything she talked about. She's totally blacked out. And then on, she like has until, I guess the interview was supposed to air Monday evening. And I guess Monday morning is the day that everyone finds out that Mia's mom is going to like get married to Mr. Giannini. And so then Mia starts kind of freaking out about that. And also at the same time, Mia finds out she's got a secret admirer.
Yes, this is very fun. So Mia gets a handwritten letter sent to her house. And again, I have lots of questions about the like security protocols that they have for Mia and her mother.
I was thinking the exact same thing when I read this. I was like, anthrax immediately.
Yeah, or like just a general stalker. Like Lily has already had a stalker, so it's not too surprising to think that a teenage princess would potentially have a stalker. And so she gets this love letter anonymously in the paper mail. And it's from someone who says, "Hey, I liked you from before you were a princess. I think you're the josiest girl around," which is a reference to Josie and the Pussycats.
The Pussycats.
The cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah. Which took me a second. I don't know about you, but like I loved, so Josie and the Pussycats is the same as like Betty and Veronica and Archie. It's all in that same universe, which if you watch Riverdale, you would know.
I do.
We know you do. But growing up, I used to love getting those like big thick Archie books or like Josie books or stuff from like Publix checkout. My dad would get them and send them to me when I was at summer camp. So like I vividly remember reading those comics. I don't think I ever saw the movie, but there's a lot of references to the Josie and the Pussycats movie in this book. These books just they were written in the 90s, and they really want you to know that there's so many 90s pop culture references in these books, which looking back now, I love. I definitely don't think I caught onto them when I was like first reading the books, and I think it's because I was probably just like a little too young to get all of them, but there's some really funny ones. But Mia is super excited about this secret admirer because she thinks, or she hopes, that it might be Michael Moskowitz.
Which makes sense because they did dance together at the cultural diversity dance in the last book. But Mia's like, "I can't tell Lily about the secret admirer, and I can't tell Lily about my crush on Michael because I've been in love with Michael forever." And I'm like, don't gaslight me about your crush on Michael. You thought that he had a nice chest, but like you were in love with Josh Richter. You were not in love with Michael Moskowitz. Don't try and fool me.
Okay. Side note. I rewatched The Princess Diary, the first movie, and Josh's name is Josh Bryant or like something in the movie. It's like they totally like changed his last name. And I just don't get it because I don't think Richter is that.
No, I totally agree. So she wants to get to the bottom of who the secret admirer is. And he even PMs her on their like either AOL. But so this Josie person even like private messages her via like instant messaging or whatever. I think it's like either AOL or like their school specific instant messaging platform. And so Mia keeps trying to get to the bottom of who that is. She thinks that it's Michael. She hopes that it's Michael, who has continued to help her with her algebra stuff. She's also getting help from her science partner, Kenny, who I guess just like does all of her science homework for her. And that's just a funny little aside that Mia apparently just like doesn't do any of her homework as a princess. And we also, by the way, got clarification on what G&T is, gifted and talented. So in the first chapter of this book, essentially, it says it's not a study hall.
No, because then in the interview, she says it's basically just a study hall.
She says they basically fuck around.
Exactly.
Yeah, but she says in the first chapter of this book that it's not study hall.
Okay, whatever. I thought I was right. But what I wanted to highlight is that Kenny starts doing her biology homework because she refuses to dissect fetal pig. And then she's out of school for like 4 days for this illness that she gets before her interview. So this guy, Kenny Showalter, who is apparently better. She keeps bringing up this one guy who I feel like I'm bringing this up because I feel like I remember it being significant in future books. There's one guy who every time they serve chili at school, they always put corn in it. And this guy cries every time. And so she's like, at least Kenny's better than the guy who cries when there's corn in his chili. And I think I remember that she dates the guy in the future books who cries when there's corn in his chili. So I feel like I need to
bring that up. Spoiler alert for that guy.
I don't know.
I guess I haven't read totally that far wrong. Into the future about that.
No, this is something to the point. This is something I read back when I read them in high school. So cannot tell you whether or not that's going to be right or not.
Well, I hope so. But to Claire's point about Mia coming down with an illness, she gets like strep throat or something and she gets prescribed codeine cough medicine. And she's really worried that
it to school and gives
it to Michael. Yeah, she tries to offer it to Michael. And then Principal Gupta calls her into the office. Yeah, Principal Gupta calls her into the principal's office and is like, you can't be dealing drugs on school campus. Which and Mia goes, well, what about all this? Yes, but Mia goes, what about all the cheerleaders and popular kids who are standing outside smoking cigarettes and trading Dexatrim? And Principal Gupta goes, there's a difference between Dexatrim and cigarettes from narcotics. And I'm like, that's the funniest shit I've ever heard. I think it was a tie in terms of funniest things that have ever happened, in this book at least, from at one point. So Mia gets this assignment where she has to start keeping a journal for English class. And she's already writing in a diary. So she's like, I'm going to make a fake journal where I write my fake thoughts and feelings and like keep all my real stuff in this diary. And so one of the assignments for this English journal is talking about like who she'd want to switch places with if she could. I can't remember the general assignment, but she essentially says that she would want to switch places with Michelle Kwan. And this was like peak Michelle Kwan, like Olympic era. Do you want me to keep talking while you... Okay, I'm going to keep talking about Michelle Kwan. So this was, I think, in the primo Michelle Kwan era when she was like the Olympian. I think I read her book when I was in fourth grade or something like that. But so Mia writes, after considerable thought, I decided that I would most want to be in the body of Michelle Kwan, the Olympic ice skater, since she is very pretty and has a marketable skill. I don't know who is like in the market for an ice skater, but okay. And then she continues, and as everyone knows, it is quite stylish these days to be Asian. And then she writes, either Michelle or Britney Spears, so I could finally have bigger breasts. Hey, did you save your dog?
I did. That was a bad section, especially to read now during Asian American Pacific Islander Month.
Yeah, like, Asian American Pacific Islander Month. This is my Asian book of the month.
I guess if Mia wants to be Asian, that was cringe. But
oh no, the 14-year-old is cringe.
Well, she's cringe throughout the entire thing. It was more cringe to read in that like. I feel like now 14-year-olds would be like hyper woke. You know what I mean? Like,
who's to say? Wokeness. Speaking of cringe, though, Mia, so after this interview with faux Barbara Walters, who starts dating Mia's dad, comes out, Mia gets a slew of phone calls from her friends at school, and she is getting eviscerated by Lily. Lily, who I have already been staking my claim as worst character.
She's the worst friend. I would say, I don't know if she's our worst character, but she's definitely, by and large, the worst quote-unquote friend. Because, like, she makes what any of those mean click girls do, like, look insignificant. Because she does it under the guise of, like, trying to, like, she thinks she's an actual friend. She thinks that Mia is her, like, actual best friend. And the number of things that Lily does this book that just were horrendous, like, horrible made me so mad. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Mia's cousin who comes in for the wedding, or do you want to first talk about Mia or Lily's response to Mia's interview? I think that we should go interview first.
I agree with interview, but Lily's, it's a continued response, I would say. So
yes,
so Mia's getting all these calls. She also forgets about the interview because she's too worried about her mom, because her mom is like dealing with horrible morning sickness, but like all day. And so she's like, she's forgotten about it. She's because obviously she's 14 and she's got other things on her mind. So then she sits down with Mr. Giannini to watch the interview. And she's like, oh, my God, that was the worst 15 minutes of my entire life. This is terrifying. Her first phone call is from her friend, Shamika. Am I making that?
Yes, Shamika.
I feel like that's right. And Shamika's dad basically heard this call about, heard the thing about, like, how everyone at the school goes to parties and everything and is basically taking Shamika out of the school now. And so Shamika's furious with Mia. And then Lily calls, and Lily is also furious with Mia because Mia didn't tell her. This is, like, the stupidity of this, like, argument from Lily just is, like, it's hard to, like, say. Basically, Mia didn't tell her about the interview, or she told her about the interview, but not who it was with. And she didn't know that it was that Beverly, this Barbara Walters person, is Mia, is Lily's, like, biggest role model. I don't know. It was kind of, it was super bullshit, the argument.
Yeah. It was one part. You didn't tell me that you were going to do this interview with this person who I've always admired, which Mia was like, you never told me that. And then it was also, you said that I was going to be your first princess interview person. And Mia's like, I'm on your show all the time. I don't see what the big deal is. Also, my mom is pregnant and my math, like, algebra teacher is going to move into my apartment. And I'm the princess of a small principality.
I have other things on my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't keep track of who your latest celebrity role model is.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm in love with your brother and I can't tell you. So, like, hanging out with you is incredibly difficult.
And then she gets a third call from Tina Hakeem Baba, yes, who's like, you mentioned my name on TV and you said that I have a bodyguard. So my dad is super excited because now anyone who'd want to kidnap me knows not to mess with me. Justice for Tina, yes, Hakeem Baba.
Yeah, I mean, Tina's very excited. Grand Mère is not thrilled. So, sorry, I just got a work email. So I'm responding to that. Grand Mère was,
well,
not thrilled.
Well,
thought the rest of the she, like, wasn't paying attention. So Grand Mère thought that she was like, they didn't even show any of the palace in a very superficial way, and only that Grand Mère can care.
But then they do eventually show the palace, and also, and Mia's blue eyeshadow looks pretty, so I guess Grand Mère is happy now.
Grand Mère is very happy. Her blue eyeshadow did look pretty. Apparently Tina's model mom said that it was just the right touch. But Tina overall campaign, I think I'm going to jump on Courtney's campaign for Tina to be the best friend because Tina is so much better.
No, absolutely. So that's the end of the interview, which was big drama. We also mentioned that for this wedding that Grand Mère has decided that she's going to throw for Helen Thermopolis and Mr. Giannini, it's going to be at the plaza in the Golden White Ballroom, and Mia's mother's bridesmaids are going to be all supermodels, and they're planning it in like a week. And this is now Mia's princess lessons. Her princess lessons are no longer how to sit. It's how to throw a party.
Exactly. Mia, so Helen originally wanted to have a Halloween courthouse wedding where she goes dressed in a gorilla suit and, like, everyone is goofy. And it's important because Mia wants to go. So Michael invited Mia to go with him and, like, all of their other friends to Rocky Horror on Halloween, which is that Friday. So she, like, wants to do that. And so basically the plan is that she'll go to the courthouse first and then she'll go to Rocky Horror after. Grand Mère is throwing this massive, like, 600-person wedding in a week, and Mia's kind of trying, she's trying to be like, Mom really doesn't want that. Also, I have other plans on Friday with this boy I'm into, who she finds out Josie Rocks, which is Joe, J-O-C-R-O-X, Josie Rocks, which is her secret admirer, is also going to go to Rocky Horror. So that's, she's sure it's Michael. So it's imperative to Mia that she gets to go to Rocky Horror. One thing does get in her way of that desire, and I don't know if this is your fashion moment or not. Is it?
Mia's dress moment? Yes. This is not the particular fashion moment for me.
Okay. Well, so Grand Mère pulls out, like, basically the most beautiful princess dress that Mia has literally ever seen. And she is, it's so funny because like, I'm the same kind of person where like an outfit, a good outfit can convince me to do anything. So Mia is immediately like, I will do anything in the world to get to wear this dress, this perfect pink dress. And I'm just like, you know what? Same girl. I feel you on that.
I respect like, it. I no, I totally get way. It.
Yeah. It's why I went but to prom, because I found the dress I wanted to wear. Not because I actually want to go to prom.
But to help Helen be swayed in the decision-making towards having this plaza wedding, Grandmère calls in Helen's mother and father from Indiana. And Mia walks back into the apartment from Princess Lessons and sees her maternal grandmother and grandfather, and also her cousin, who she hasn't seen in like years. And she's like, oh, this is bad. And she eventually, she gets on the phone with her father and is like, we need to put these people in a hotel. They need to not be in this apartment. And they're pretty pissed about being pushed off into a hotel until they realize that they're not going to have to pay for it. And I'm like, that just encapsulates everything about who you are as people.
Oh, yeah. That also, so Mia's cousin has been kind of hoisted upon her. And they're like, oh, her cousin Hank, who's the beefy farm cousin who she said used to like be super annoying and allergic to everything, which same. Hank has been kind of foisted onto Mia, and they'll be like, Hank, we'll go to school with you tomorrow, because that's what everyone wants to do when they're visiting New York as a teenager, is go to high school. So Mia's really against that. She's like, I'd really rather not bring my cousin around with me to school all day tomorrow. But everyone else seems to be for it. So Hank goes to school with Mia. And this is where we learned that Hank is super freaking hot.
Yeah, everyone is obsessed with him. And he has like a special connection with Lily, which really sets Boris off. And Boris is like, oh, I can't stand this. Yeah, Boris and Lily are dating. And Mia is upset because Lily never told her that they were French kissing. And Mia's like, God, am I the only person in this whole school who's never French kissed a boy?
Apparently, she really is the only person in that school who's never French kissed a boy, because they go in and they host one of Lily's little, they have a sleepover, and they're doing Lily's show at the sleepover where they're all talking about like delinquent teenagers. And the delinquency is them like French kissing people. So Mia's the only one who's not able to participate, so instead she throws an eggplant out of a door and almost gets caught throwing the eggplant out, well, not out of the door, out of the window. But instead, Michael pulls her inside. It's like, saves the day. But anyway, Lily starts to, like, disappear for long periods of time with Hank.
Like, she skips class.
Multiple days in a row. And it's so weird because, like, Hank was, like, not interested at all in like in Lana, in like, you know, the secretary at the school, like any of these other women, but he seems to be very taken by Lily. And so they're missing like days of school. Mia's grandparents don't know where Hank is. Like, it's super weird. Lily's missing the like limo in the morning. And finally, it's revealed that Lily's been using her time to try to help Hank get a modeling contract, because it's been his dream to be a Calvin Klein underwear model, which is so 90s.
And I'm kind of into it. And so he...
I'm so into it.
He's Mia's age, roughly. Like, he's not 18 or anything like that, but he's like, I'm going to stay in New York City and be a professional model. And there are really no plans for how he's gonna do that, but I guess it doesn't matter. That's a plot line that really like never gets addressed, at least in this book.
So he does come in and plant a fat one on Lily in front of everybody else, and Boris takes this as initiative to punch him in the face, and instead of, there's a sickening crunch, and I was like, oh no, they ruined poor Hank's famous face. Nope, Boris breaks his hand, so he can't play sad music on his violin anymore. Very funny.
Yes, very humorous. So that brings us to Halloween, the wedding. Mm-hmm. And Mia goes to the plaza to get ready for the wedding. And people are starting to get antsy because where is Helen and where is Mr. Giannini? Nobody can find them. And then,
like, all
Philippe,
day.
Mia's, yeah, like, all day, nobody can find them. Philippe eventually hands an envelope to Mia. It's like, you can read this at one very specific time. And eventually gets to that time, and Mia reads it. And it's basically a letter from Mia's mother saying, hey, I couldn't tell you this because I wanted you to have plausible deniability with Grandmère, but Mr. Giannini and I ran off to Mexico and we're eloping there. I miss you. Wish you were here. For obvious reasons, you can't be. See you when I get back. And Mia is one part pissed because she's like, how could you not tell me this? Like, nobody tells me anything ever.
No,
and they exactly. expect her to be this, like, responsible person, but then they're also, like, not trusting her with any of the actual facts. But also, she's 14, so I understand not looping her into everything.
Or,
but you know, this...
I would think that, like, one or two things. If they can trust her, well, I mean, I guess they... She kind of showed that they can't trust her with secrets by blabbing on national television, so...
Yeah, but it all... It's, like, not very consequential. But so this sends Grandmère into a bit of a tailspin, and she locks herself up in her suite at the plaza. And it takes Lars, Philippe, and Mia knocking on the door to try and get her to come out. And Mia eventually goes, Grandmère, did you not teach me that a princess never leaves her party unattended? That she should never leave her guests alone? And that if there's ever a fork thrown into her plan, she has to just take it in stride and act like that was her plan all along? And so then Grandmère sweeps out of the door and goes, yes, I was just refreshing my makeup. And walks downstairs with Mia on one arm and Philippe on the other arm, and it's a cute little family moment.
Very cute. I loved it. We did kind of gloss over another Lily moment, which I'm shocked you didn't bring up, that happened prior to the wedding.
Frankly, I probably blocked it out of my mind because she makes me mad and I don't look for opportunities to be mad.
Okay. Well, so Lily's show airs on Wednesday nights. And so the show from the weekend before, the one where Mia tosses the eggplant out of the window, airs on Wednesday night. They don't do the eggplant moment. Well, they do it, but they don't show Mia's face because obviously that would be bad because she's technically breaking a law and could have massively hurt someone, and that would have been not good for Genovia. What does get aired is Lily secretly filmed a private conversation she had with Mia about Mia's doubts and, like, discomfort with being a princess, and airs it on, it's not national television, but it's local television, and it, like, could be picked up if somebody knew what to look for and what to find. And that is just such a violation of privacy. It is so, it was, like, it disgusting is, to me.
It did also have my second favorite humorous moment in this book, where Mia is being interviewed while she's almost asleep, like, she's falling asleep, and Mia is like, when I am Princess of Genovia and when I am in charge, I'm going to turn the entire palace into a rescue cat sanctuary, and they're just going to be cats running cute. Everywhere. Very cute, very on brand so for Mia cute. But then Lily goes, what is your grandmother going to say about, like, turning the palace into a cat sanctuary? And Mia goes, who cares, she'll be dead.
And then she falls asleep, which is, it's so funny and so cute. But just the idea of your best friend breaking that, like, confidence with you, it just was so icky. Like, I just couldn't get over it. And it really bummed me out. And, like, in a way that, like, Lily being annoying is one thing. But, like, this was, like, I don't know, like, could have been my Britney moment. It was just really sad that she felt like she could do that to her friend. So
yeah, because Lily only cares about herself.
She does only care about herself. But so this has happened. Lily gets no repercussions for it. Mia does nothing, which is just, like, eventually I hope she sticks up for herself to Lily. I hope she realizes that Lily's not being great, but not this book. Womp womp.
No.
So the wedding's off. Grandmère is okay, ends up dancing with Gerald Ford, which when I was reading this, I was like, what? So I asked when did Gerald Ford die? And he goes, I don't know, 2005? And I was like, Okay. And I guess that's canonically okay that she could dance with former president Gerald R. Ford. I was like, what the fuck is happening?
There are a lot of celebrity appearances in this book. The bridesmaids are like Giselle and other Victoria's Secret models.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is there. And he has this is our second Donald Trump reference in two books. And he has a long tete-a-tete with Martha Stewart, who eventually helps Mia transform her beautiful bridesmaid dress into a Halloween costume. Is this your
fashion moment? Which we will get into later, because that is my fashion moment.
Okay.
So,
well, it's part of the plot, so I have to say it.
Yeah. And so the Halloween costume is for Glinda the Good Witch, which you gotta love it. And... So she goes as Glinda the Good Witch, and then Martha turns to Lars, who obviously has to go with Mia to Rocky Horror, and is like, and you're James Bond. And Lars is like, yes, I am James Bond, with my guns and my tuxedo.
I love Lars so much. Lars is great. Helen is great. Philippe is interesting. They're awesome.
Yeah. Lars has not ever spoken a word, I don't think.
That's not true. He talked when Josh Richter wanted to drive drunk to the dance, and also when he wanted Josh Richter to pull the car around back behind the school because of the paparazzi. He's spoken a couple of times.
Okay. Anyway, so they get in the car and they go downtown for Rocky Horror, which I am shocked does not take them like 4 hours, because it's Halloween. There's a parade. They're going from the plaza down to the village, like in a limo. Good luck. But somehow they make it and they get in line. And so it's the computer club that's going to Rocky Horror, as well as, you know, Lily and some of Mia's other friends. And that's important to note because Michael's obviously, he's the head of the computer club, obviously, with his zine. You know, he's Mr. Computer Man. But Kenny, Mia's lab partner, Kenny Showalter, is also a member of the computer club. So he's also there. The computer club is dressed as members of people from Saving Private Ryan, complete with fake limbs. And Lily, her Halloween costume is good. Is that your... Is that your
fashion moment? No, that's not my fashion moment.
Okay.
Her Halloween costume is good. I give props to that.
Yeah, she does typical, like, psychology major, college student. She's a Freudian slip, so she's dressed as Sigmund Freud in a slip dress, which is funny. Boris is Al Capone, but, like, he still has his... He's, like, nerd Al Capone, because he still has this sweater tucked into his pants. But Mia ends up sitting through the movie, and I don't know if you've ever done this, sitting in between two guys that you're both interested in both, or, like... I don't know, like, this is such, like, a trope where, like, there's two guys fighting to sit next to a girl. It's never happened to me, but I've seen it happen to my friends, where it's, like, you can tell who the it girl is. Mia has no idea that she is the it girl. So Michael wants to sit next to her, and then Kenny also really wants to sit next to her. So the entire movie, she's watching Michael watch the movie, and Kenny's watching her watch Michael watch the movie. And so there's this whole, like, kind of chain reaction of laughter. For anyone who's unfamiliar with Rocky Horror, it's not a scary movie at all. It's like a cult classic. I don't really want to, like, I feel like it's kind of silly to explain Rocky Horror, but it's like an interactive movie viewing. Sometimes there are actors, you throw things, you sing, you dance. It's very fun. But she was kind of looking forward to hopefully having Michael, like, put his arm around her during the scary bits, which is cute.
It was very cute. I liked it a lot. And I thought that it was, like, it must have been very quintessential New York City teenager, early 2000s, like late 90s, early 2000s. And so I thought that was cute. And then afterwards, they go to this, like, late night diner for food. And Kenny drops the bomb to Mia that he is Josie Rocks. And he asks her on a date. And he does it in a way where he's like, would you want to go out sometime? And Mia goes, don't you just hate that when someone says, do you want to go out sometime? Not like, do you want to go out next Tuesday? So you can't say, oh, no, I'm busy next Tuesday. Because if they don't give you a specific date, then you can't just say, well, no, I never want to go out with you ever, 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 ever. And I'm like, Mia, you were just complaining about how nobody wants to date you. So how do you even know that you, like, feel that? Wait, I'm not saying that means that she should go out with Kenny. I'm saying, how do you know that you don't like people asking you out this way? That was an interesting thought.
Totally fair. I think that that's very valid. But I do think that, like, knowing that you're not into someone is a pretty easy thing to know. So, like,
oh, totally.
She knows she's not into Kenny. So it's like any way that Kenny asked her out would be a way she didn't like.
Exactly. And maybe it's just, oh, well, that only gives you the ick because it's Kenny doing it. And you would have been more than happy to say, yes, I would go out with you at an indefinite time and date if it were Michael. But so she has to go out with Kenny.
I was going to say, that's kind of how David asked me out, was like, would you want to get food sometime? And I said, how about next Thursday? So then there's always this ambiguous thing of like, no, you asked me out first. I was like, no, you definitely asked me out first. I just clarified the details on a date. But anyway.
What a weird thing to be competitive about with someone you're married to.
Well, you know me and David, so there's that. If you weren't aware, we're competitive. It's not great. I hope our children will be okay. We'll see. But anyway, Michael's watching this whole thing happen. And he's getting, like, agitated by it. And I know that he's, like, only, like, 17 or 18. Hopefully 17. Just makes me feel a little bit better. But, like, I always read these books and I'm just like, communication skills, guys. Just, like, they should teach that in school. They should teach you how to talk to people. Because no one's good at it.
Oh, absolutely. Michael needs to work on his communication skills, especially since his two parents are psycho-frickin' analysts, and he's had multiple opportunities to say something
to
Mia.
Ask her out for real. Yeah.
But, and, like, I don't want to, like, leverage this as, like, he's the adult in the situation, but, like, he is older, and so, like, he could certainly have asked her. But I also see the whole, like, I'm the older brother of the best friend of this girl. And, like, that could be potentially very awkward. And it could make all of our lives very awkward. So I could see his hesitancy. But, like, you don't get to throw your pissy fit because some 14-year-old boy beat you to the punch. Sorry, get over it.
Yes.
Grow up.
Mia does get very excited, though, because Michael comes out and says that she looks very pretty. Which, honestly, I remember feeling like that, having one guy say one. I once had a guy my senior year of high school tell me, well, my junior year, he was a senior. He told me I reminded him of Brie Larson in 21 Jump Street. And I held on to that forever and ever. I was like, that's, and he was like, yeah, like, you look like her. And I was like, thank you. And I was like, that's amazing. And it wasn't even really a compliment. And so Mia got an actual compliment from an older boy. So I can only imagine how good that would feel.
Yes. And I'm very much finding enjoyment from the little, like, side-eye mental conversations that Michael and Lars are having throughout the past two books.
Yes.
Where, like, you can see them telecommunicating, and I'm like, that's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It's very cute. I also like the fact that, like, it's very obvious that Lars, like, is team Michael. I wish Lars would be, like, a little bit more team Michael and be like, Mia, Michael likes you.
But their relationship needs to develop a lot more. What I would love from this series would be more Lars, more Grandmère, more Philippe, more Helen, and then more Lars' relationship with Mia, more Lars' relationship with Helen.
Yeah.
And more of that. Like, I really could do without Lily, obviously, but, like, more of the adults.
Yeah. And then I think also, like, developing Mia's other friendships into, like, more fully fledged friendships. Because Lily's just, it's not giving. It's not enough.
Her BFF should be Tina Hakeem Baba, and then her other BFF should be Lars.
I love that. And, like, they could do, like, buddy cop moments. I think it'd be great.
Yes, that'd be so fucking cute.
Like, don't give me a gun, but maybe have her, like, be the brains behind the operation. I don't know. I think it'd be really fun.
It's, what's that movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson and that girl Madison Pettis?
Oh my God, The Pacifier? No. Yeah.
No. No, not The Pacifier.
No, it's not The Pacifier. That's Vin Diesel. The Game Plan?
Maybe. It's something where, like, I think she's the president's daughter, but the same concept applies.
Oh, I'm thinking of the one where she's his daughter and, like, dropped off by the baby mama and he's a football player.
Oh, yeah. No, that one I think might be The Pacifier.
I think that one's The Game Plan. I think The Pacifier is Vin Diesel, and I don't remember what it's about. I just remember it's Vin
Diesel.
We're
gonna whoever's listening to this podcast is gonna be like, it's this movie.
If you know which movie it is, let us know in the comments of our next Instagram post. That'd be very, very helpful. I'm sure I could Google it, but it'd be more fun this way. But yeah, that's, oh, is that the end of the book? That's the end of the book. I'm pretty sure.
That's the end of the book.
But yeah, I guess Mia and Kenny are going on a date, which I feel very meh about. Maybe he'll keep doing her bio homework. Although she doesn't need anyone to do her bio homework. She needs help with algebra. But I guess her algebra teacher is going to be like her dad now. So less of a thing.
That sucks.
Cool. Well, Courtney, do you have any questions for me about this book?
No. Why does Lars not stay with Mia and her mom?
Okay, here's, okay, I knew you were gonna bring this up because you said you had questions about, like, security. My other question is, I thought when I first saw the letter come in that it might be, like, a fan letter from, like, a little girl.
Oh.
Which would have been so cute. Don't you think it would have been really cute? Been like, hi, Princess Mia. My name's Mia, yeah. Too. I'm 6 and I live in Texas or something like that. I thought it was gonna be like that.
Freaking cute.
And so, like, I'm hoping we get, like, a cute moment like that because I feel like that'd be really fun. It's like, I like blah, 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 too. Like, I have a cat. This is my cat. You know, like, things like that. So, yeah. Hoping for that going forward. But also, I'm with you. They need some kind of, maybe Lars, like, sleeps in a car outside. I don't know. It's a little sus.
Maybe there's, like, a night guard who does night watch outside of the apartment building while Lars goes home and goes to sleep.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, do they have, like, is it a doorman building?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Helen would be into that.
Yeah, I think know. It's, like, not a, I think it's pre-gentrification village.
Yeah, I mean, that's not good. You mean it's, like, mid-Giuliani war on drugs village?
I'm not entirely sure, but I'm just, like, I don't think that, based on, like, everything that we've heard about the apartment itself, I don't think that Mia is living in a doorman building, but I have to assume that there's some sort of additional security to which she's just not particularly privy because it's really not like something a 14-year-old would really care about. That was my only question.
That was your only question. I'm impressed. Usually you come with more.
But yeah, but these books are pretty straightforward.
See, I find that they're straightforward, but they also take me like longer to read. There's more to them.
There are a lot of, like, math assignments in little margins that you have to read.
Oh, yeah, and she had her cute little, like, journal assignment where she had to, like, write out her day, write out her family, talk about her like, favorite things, which was kind of cute.
I also really liked that she wanted to be Michelle Kwan.
Well, but I like that this book gave us an insight into, like, Mia's family history. Like, mm-hmm. Not just her mom and her dad, but, like, her mom's from Versailles, Indiana, which is pronounced that way, which Mia makes a note of, like, multiple times. So, and just, like, kind of, like, that color. It's remember what we wanted from the Gossip Girl books where we were, like, we want to hear more about why the parents are the way they are? We got that, and that was really satisfying. So, I like that.
Oh,
I like
totally.
The story building. I was very happy with that. So, Courtney, tell me, what was your fashion moment from this book?
So I know what yours is. So that was one of my three fashion moments. I'm not going to say that one to let you have it. I did love Grandmère planning the wedding. That was one scene that I thought was really cute. I have it here for, I'm going to search the word truffles. It's on page 137 if you're reading along with us. I'm just going to read little snippets of this and then talk about my second fashion moment, if you don't mind. So
I don't mind.
Vigo is the wedding planner for the royal wedding that's happening. And he's barking into a phone saying, no, that's 4,000 long stem pinked roses, not 400. Grandmère is sitting sampling truffles with Rommel. If you recall from last book, Rommel is Grandmère's miniature poodle who is so nervous that he shakes. And so he wears outfits. He is dressed in a chinchilla cape dyed mauve, and they're eating truffles. She's eating like a gooey, half-eaten chocolate ball. She doesn't like it because she thinks cherries are vulgar. Vigo is eating holding the box of all the half-eaten truffles. And what other Rommel outfits do we have to choose from?
There's a lot. one side note that happens kind of like in that same section is that Mia makes a note saying that she doesn't dress up her dog in chinchilla bolero jackets. And she was also never a close personal friend of Richard Nixon, which I guess that means Grandmère was a close personal friend of Richard Nixon.
Another key outfit from Rommel is that he wears on one day a pink, a mini mink bolero jacket dyed lavender to match one of the mink bolero jackets that Grandmère wears.
Which I love.
It's so funny.
Definitely interesting. Yeah.
Rommel is my other favorite character.
Rommel, the tiny, scary dog. Sure, we can go with that. What was your second fashion favorite?
Oh, it was Grandmère planning the wedding and eating the truffles versus Rommel's various outfits. So him wearing a mink bolero jacket, him wearing a cashmere sweater. Like, yeah, it's just
she dresses. It's very like Paris Hilton. She dresses up Rommel to like compliment her outfits. Another person that I wanted to highlight. Grandmère danced with, I said earlier that she danced with Gerald Ford. She also danced with Prince Albert, representing the royal family of Monaco, and Prince Andrew, who is, you know, might have been in New York visiting his friend Jeffrey Epstein at the same time. We'll never know. Sketchy. Grandmère has some weird relationships. Anyway. My fashion moment from the book is Mia's dress for the wedding, which is a beautiful pink gown, but specifically the way that Martha Stewart transforms it for her, because this is amazing. And it's so pre-Martha Goes to Jail, which it is pre-Martha Goes to Jail. So she is already a crafty queen. She isn't in prison yet. So Mia says, "I don't know if Martha had too many champagne cocktails or if she's just like this. But the next thing I knew, she was whipping me up a wand from a bunch of crystal drink stirrers that she tied together with some ivy from the centerpiece. Then she fashioned this big crown for me out of some menus and a glue gun she had in her purse. And you know what? It looked just like the one in The Wizard of Oz. She turned the writing on so it was on the inside of the crown. There, Martha said when she was through. Glinda the Good Witch." Which I just love the idea of Martha Stewart's at a royal wedding and she whips a glue gun out of her purse and she's ready to go. And yeah, that was pretty amazing stuff. So that was my favorite fashion moment. Courtney, what was your State of the Union for the week? Tell me your in and your out.
My in for this week is warm weather. It is finally over 70 degrees in Chicago this week. Beautiful. Love it. It's amazing. And then my out for the week is misleading product listings. So I have been looking to get a standing desk since I do work from home, and I think that they're great. And so I've been researching a lot to find the right desk that could fit either like in a particular part of my apartment or on top of my existing desk. I have a pretty narrow existing desk, and so I got one that, according to the online listing, would be narrow enough. Turns out it's not. Have to return it. And that means that if I want to get a standing desk, I'm going to need to buy a whole new desk, which again is fine. But I just need to come to terms with the fact that the place where I want my desk to go is just not going to work for the kind of desk that I want to have. And so I instead must move my desk into my bedroom instead of having it out in the living space, which I've always been concerned about because I'm like, oh, I want to have like the separation between like sleeping and working. But we all make sacrifices. And my bedroom is just much bigger than the living space. So I'll get over it.
That's totally fair. So my State of the Union for the week, my in, is king-size beds. We splurged and got a king-size mattress. It just arrived today. We got it from Avocado Green Mattress. If they want to sponsor us, that'd be amazing because I still need to outfit the rest of the bed. And I'm super excited about it because I've been sleeping on my childhood full-size bed with my very large husband for the last month, and it's been difficult, so I'm very excited about that. My out is being alone in a house. I had to spend last night alone in my new home, which, if you know me, you don't know where I live, but I'm trying to preface that this does not happen very often, so don't try to come kidnap me. But
I just
that was my thought.
I think you share that you live in Charlotte now.
I do. Okay. Anyway.
Well, you have already shared it on the pod. I mean, I don't mean like...
I know.
It's not news.
I know it's not news. But what all... This is not it. The news is that being home alone in a home, like, with no... Like, there's no doorman. There's no people around. Like, I was like, which kitchen knife do I put next to my bed while I sleep? So, yeah, that's not great. My mom came up from Atlanta to stay with me. So she actually just arrived. So super excited about that. But yeah, that's my out for the week, is being home alone in a house. It's fine in an apartment because, like, you have a doorman who's going to, like, stop a crazy person. But, like, I don't even think I have ADT. I don't even have, like, a Ring doorbell. So got to get that figured out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Courtney, what are we reading next week?
Next week, we are reading The Princess Diaries, Volume 3, Princess in Love. And if you Ooh. Have security recommendations for Claire or desk ideas for me or thoughts on...
Or if you know the movie we were talking about.
Yeah, if you know the movie we were talking about, or if you have like little fan drawings of Lars and Princess Mia doing like back-to-back finger guns.
Like Carry the Platypus stuff.
Amazing. You could send that to us on Twitter at Witty Pod, Instagram, Witty Committee Pod, TikTok, The Witty Committee. You can comment it on our website, thewittycommittee.com, or you can email us, wittycommitteepod@gmail.com.
But we hope that you guys join us next week as we continue to judge the mean girl right back, one book at a time.
Goodbye.